And I saw when the Lamb opened one of the seals, and I heard, as it were, the noise of thunder, saying, "Come and see."
Noise of Thunder Radio with Christian J. Pinto.
Okay, praise the Lord, you guys, and welcome. I'm Chris Pinto. This is Noise of Thunder Radio. Today on the show, we are going to talk about the tax-exempt foundations. The tax-exempt foundations and their influence, their power and influence. In fact, we're going to be quoting from the book by Rene Wurmser. Wurmser, who was the lawyer for the Rees Committee back in the 1950s, and he wrote the book, Foundations, Their Power and Influence. And we've talked about this book before on the program and the whole issue of the influence of these foundations, but which go back to the 1920s, really even earlier than that. But it's in the 1920s where, according to Norman Dodd, who was the director of research for the Rees Committee, Mr. Dodd argued that what they had uncovered was a plan, a plot by the big four foundations at the time, which were Rockefeller Foundation, Ford Foundation, the Guggenheim, and the Carnegie Endowment. And those big four at the time worked together in concert to subvert and get control of our education system. And their purpose, according to Dodd and his report, and you can go online and watch his interviews. He's got two interviews, one with G. Edward Griffin, where he talks extensively about this, and then another one with the late Dr. Stan Monteith, Dr. Stan, who was a friend of ours. In fact, I did quite a few interviews on Radio Liberty back when Dr. Stan was still with us on this side of eternity. Of course, he was a Christian man, a servant of the Lord, and I got to interview Dr. Stan several times. He appears in several of our documentaries. If you watch the Secret Mystery series, you will see Dr. Stan Monteith there. And back when we lived in California, we would set up the interviews, and then I would drive several hours to his studio, which was way, way up in the mountains. It was quite a drive to get up there, but it was, once you got up there, beautiful views. Beautiful views there along the coastline of California. But Dr. Stan was a great guy, and he worked really hard, did multiple radio programs every day, and I got to sit with him live in person. I also did a number of call-in interviews. Got to speak in one of his conferences that he had back when we lived out in California, which you can still find online where I'm talking about the New Atlantis. But anyway, Dr. Stan also interviewed Norman Dodd, who was the director of research for the Rees Committee. And again, the Rees Committee was a congressional committee. So this is not conspiracy theory. This is not people just speculating wildly about things and coming up with ideas. This was the United States Congress, U.S. Congressional appointed officials went and looked at and read the records of these tax-exempt foundations and discovered quite directly what they were doing and how far back it went. It went back probably about 30 years at that point, because this is the 1950s. Now, if you look at the book on foundations at the beginning in the preface, you have an introduction by B. Carroll Rees. B, which stands for Brazilla, and he was the congressman for whom the Rees Committee was named. And he says in the beginning, he says, quote, "The most difficult assignment of my 30 years in the Congress of the United States was the chairmanship of the Special Committee to Investigate Tax-Exempt Foundations, informally referred to as the Rees Committee. This investigation required embarrassingly close scrutiny of the intellectual activities supported by the great and highly respected American names of Carnegie, Rockefeller, and Ford. Those are the big three. But Guggenheim is also mentioned by Norman Dodd. He says, quote, as a minority member of the Cox Committee, which in the previous Congress had attempted but virtually abandoned this project, I had sensed the power that would spring up in opposition to a complete investigation. The obstacles were obvious from the first. We knew that the influential liberal press, characterized by the New York Times, the New York Herald Tribune, and the Washington Post Times Herald, would throw its editorial power against the committee. So he's talking about all the way back in the 1950s, you had liberals that were controlling the mainstream media of that time. Now, this is probably during a time when television had not fully taken hold and gained as much power as it would later on. It's important to remember that a political turning point happened with TV during the time of John F. Kennedy. And when Kennedy was running for office, when he was running for the office of the president, and he famously debated Richard Nixon on television, now live TV, and you had JFK and you had Nixon, and it was said at the time, everybody thought Nixon was much more qualified, smarter, knew the policies, knew government much better than JFK, but JFK looked better on TV. He looked better on camera, and he was very charming and very smooth. Now, of course, at that time, people just sort of wave that off. Oh, it doesn't matter, you know, how he looks. What really matters are the policies and the ideas, because we really know what we're talking about, this kind of thing. And then they realize with television that, no, actually, a good-looking guy with charisma can actually sway an audience. And that was a turning point in American politics. And so television now became this very important medium, and people involved in politics realized, look, you can't just get away with having these political ideas and so on and think that that's going to be enough. You're going to have to look good. You're going to have to sound good. You're going to have some personality. You're going to have to win over the audience with a certain amount of charm and charisma and so on. Information is not, alone is not going to do it. And so, but when B. Carroll Reese is writing to us, even though film was still happening, you know, TV was still there to some extent, it had not fully taken hold. It wasn't yet as prominent or as influential. All right, so B. Carroll Reese, he goes on, he's talking about the influence of these newspapers, and the newspapers were very influential. You know, there's a great film to watch, Citizen Kane, if you've never seen Orson Welles' movie, very famous classic film, Citizen Kane, which is about a newspaper man, and it was patterned after the life of William Randolph Hearst and the Hearst newspapers and so on. And Hearst is where you get the term yellow journalism, the idea of fake news, yellow journalism, which is fake news. And most famously characterized by the idea of Hearst telling a photographer to go to a foreign country and get photographs of the war. And the photographer said, "What war?" And Hearst said, "Well, you just go get the pictures and we'll create the war." And it was this idea that the newspapers are not really dealing honestly at all. They have an agenda. They're very political. And they're manipulating information and imagery and things like that toward their own ends. Now, of course, today, I think most people who are paying attention would agree that's exactly where mainstream media is. Mainstream media is partisan political propaganda. That's what it is. Partisan political propaganda. There's very little journalism or news that goes on. I think maybe at a local level, you can still watch local news and they actually tell you what's happening. And it's not so much full of partisan propaganda. All right, so Reese goes on. He says, quote, "We knew that even the bulk of the conservative press could not be unmindful of the enormous power of these foundations. We knew that many prominent educators, regardless of what they felt, could not be unmindful of the dependency of their institutions upon the continued largesse from the foundations involved." So prominent educators, schools, colleges, universities that were receiving funding from these tax-exempt foundations. Now, Norman Dodd talks about this. He talks about how it was because these groups had large amounts of cash. So, and why do they have large amounts of cash? Well, because these foundations don't have to pay taxes. They're tax exempt. So they're making millions and billions of dollars, and they're able to keep then many millions of dollars that they turn around and use to finance various colleges, universities, to provide scholarships, fellowships, etc. They're able to buy influence. How is it that Bill Gates, for example, here in modern times, how is it that Bill Gates is showing up on TV and he's being interviewed by all these journalists and so on who are treating him as though he's the expert on coronavirus and vaccines and all this other kind of stuff, even though the guy has no medical degree, never graduated college even, he's not a scientist, he has no demonstrable expertise in either the identification of viruses or the whole vaccine industry. In fact, he's been opposed and discredited by others because they say his vaccines have crippled hundreds of thousands of people in foreign countries, India in particular. That's the assertion made by people like RFK Jr. So why would they interview him? Well, people believe it's because he is a billionaire, a multi-billionaire many times over, and he's got this foundation and they pay money out. They buy influence. Why else would anybody look to him as an expert? Especially on vaccines, maybe an expert on computer technology, on software, on the internet, things that actually pertain to how it is that he became wealthy and famous. To be an expert in those areas, but concerning vaccines and viruses, and we're supposed to ignore the tens of thousands of doctors and nurses and medical professionals around the world? And to say that they're all conspiracy theorists, they don't know what they're talking about, who oppose him and Fauci. You see, this is where these large foundations, it's just an example. When you have Bill and Melinda Gates and their massive foundation, and with them, you have George Soros. In fact, they published a picture just a few weeks ago of George Soros meeting with Nancy Pelosi. Nancy Pelosi and George Soros just a few weeks ago meeting. And now, of course, Nancy Pelosi has been at the Vatican meeting with the Pope. She's dressed in black. You can go look at the photographs there. The socialist Pope. And she's had nice things to say about the Pope. George Soros's foundation is called Open Society Foundations. And you can find them online, opensocietyfoundations.org. And Open Societies is just, it's really a continuation. You know, Bill and Melinda Gates, Open Societies, and also the Clinton Foundation. All of these tax-exempt foundations that are using their billions and billions of dollars to promote communism and globalism. And remember, globalism is basically international communism. But this was first uncovered by the Rees Committee back in the 1950s. And there's no question that the focus of Rockefeller and Ford, especially if you go to their websites today, there's no question that the Rockefeller Foundation has everything to do with what's happening with COVID-19 and coronavirus. It was their scenario that was published back in 2010. But here's another publication from them just 3 years prior to publishing their lockstep scenario. In their 2007 annual report, they published, quote, smart globalization, benefiting more people more fully in more places. And this seems to be part of the build back better idea that they wreck everything with coronavirus and now they're going to build back better and engage in some massive international redistribution of wealth initiative or program or series of programs that will further this whole idea of international communism and socialism around the world. And there's no question that they're using COVID-19 now as the key instrument to get it done. Okay, let's go to our commercial break. We will talk more when we come back right after this.
Adullam Films presents a stunning new documentary, The True Christian History of America, exploring the Bible-based Christian origins of the early American view of freedom, tracing the principles of liberty back to England and the Great Reformation. For many years, our schools have taught that the founding of our republic was from the deists or the Enlightenment in France. But is that truly the case? Did the Enlightenment first declare no taxation without representation or trial by jury? Were they the champions of freedom of speech or of the press or the right to bear arms? And why did Samuel Adams declare that the reign of political Protestantism would commence just before signing the Declaration of Independence? Filmed on location in both the United States and Europe, The True Christian History of America is now available at adullamfilms.com. That's adullamfilms.com. Now available at noiseofthunderradio.com. That's noiseofthunderradio.com.
Noise of Thunder Radio.
Okay, we are back. Praise the Lord, you guys. I'm Chris Pinto. This is Noise of Thunder Radio. Today on the show, we're talking about the tax-exempt foundations. You know, I've been reading the preface here by Congressman B. Carol Reese. This was a book first published back in 1958, at least according to the copy I have here. Copyright 1958 by Renee A. Wormser. And Congressman Reese is discussing how he was part of a committee called the Cox Committee, a congressional committee called the Cox Committee, and then the Reese Committee was sort of the continuation. He says, quote, I felt that the work of the Cox Committee left several important unanswered questions, of which the gravest was, to what extent, if any, are the funds of the large foundations aiding and abetting Marxist tendencies in the United States and weakening the love which every American should have for his way of life. So we set out to find the answers. We wanted to explore the problems of foundations by examining their actions, not their statements for the public. We felt that there are involved in the concepts under which the foundations operate and grow in the United States certain dangers for the public welfare. We were not blind to the undoubted merits of the contributions of numerous tax-exempt foundations to worthwhile causes. It was our intention to find the factual basis for preserving their constructive functions and at the same time for supplying guidance for future legislation and administrative action against the use of foundation power for political ends. Okay? Political ends. Now, I found that statement very, very insightful, where he says, we wanted to explore the problems by examining their actions, not their statements for the public. Because we all know now that these Marxist organizations are expert at coming up with humanitarian sounding philanthropic dialogue about how they're helping humanity and they're lifting up the downtrodden and this kind of thing. And then when you examine what they're actually doing, you realize all of that is double talk. It's deception and lies. So they are using philanthropy as a cloak. This is a centuries-old Jesuit device. This is what they are known for throughout history. And it's why I believe that the Jesuits, one of the reasons why, I believe the Jesuits are the co-authors of communism and socialism. That and the fact that they're the ones who coined the phrase social justice back in 1843 and then were reported to be working with Karl Marx in the 1850s by Otto von Bismarck. All right, so now let me read here part of the introduction by René Wormser. Again, Wormser was the lawyer for the Rees Committee. He says, quote, in his column in the New York Daily News of December 21st, 1954, John O'Donnell said that the Rees Committee had the almost impossible task of telling the taxpayers that the incredible was, in fact, the truth. The incredible fact, he continued, was that the huge fortunes piled up by such industrial giants as John D. Rockefeller, Andrew Carnegie, and Henry Ford were today being used to destroy or discredit the free enterprise system which gave them birth. Now, this is something that Norman Dodd talks about in his interview, and I think this is so important to remember. With what we have seen with COVID-19 and coronavirus and what they did by forcing all of these different companies to shut down. Basically, your small businesses were forced into lockdown. They had to shut their doors. They were threatened with jail and fines and everything else if they opened. And meanwhile, your mega super industries, your massive corporations, they were deemed essential. And the small business owners were deemed non-essential. And how many times have we heard politicians say in years prior that small business is the backbone of America? And so in a sense, if you look at it that way, it's almost like they wanted to break the backbone of the American economy. And meanwhile, it has been said repeatedly that these massive corporations have gotten that much more wealthy because all of the trade and purchasing and so on flowed into their hands and away from the middle class, away from the independent small business owner. Which brings us to an important part of this interview that G. Edward Griffin had with Norman Dodd. He asks him why, going back to this idea here, that that these foundations wanted to destroy or discredit the free enterprise system which gave them birth. You know, why would they want to do that? And Norman Dodd gives the answer, or at least the answer according to his investigation. But listen to what he says.
Why do the foundations generously support communist causes in the United States?
Well, because to them, what communism represents a means of developing what we call a monopoly. That is, the organization, we'll say, of large-scale industry into an administrable unit.
Do they think that they will be one
they
of the
will be they will be the beneficiaries of it, yes.
So there you have it. According to Norman Dodd, the reason is that communism will ultimately give them and their allies, of course. And we can sort of figure out who their allies, the allies of the Rockefellers and the Fords and so on. We can figure out who their allies are today. They're a very small club of billionaires and powerful people. And this will give them, communism will give them a monopoly on trade and industry and so on. So they will be the ones who decide who is essential, who's non-essential. They'll be able to control eventually the finances of the entire world. And this now we get that in view and we look at what they're doing with the vaccines, where they're headed in the direction that no man will be able to buy or sell unless you take this vaccine, this COVID vaccine. In fact, we heard kind of a funny story from somebody who is very close to our ministry, a longtime friend and supporter of ours, who works in the corporate world. And she said she knew a woman who was a Christian. And she was, I think she was a nurse, or she had some corporate job where they were requiring that everybody get vaccinated, unless you had, and they were allowing some exemptions. And she went in and she sat down and she told them that she had a religious exemption. And they asked her, okay, well, what is your religious exemption? And she said, I think the vaccine is the mark of the beast. And I'm a Christian, and I don't want to take the mark of the beast. And apparently her employer let her off the hook. They told her she didn't have to take it. She thinks it's the mark of the beast. I mean, if that is your conscience before God, then by all means, don't take it. Now, we've talked about it before on this program. We don't believe that it is, quote, the mark of the beast, the official mark of the beast. But there's no question that they are. This is all this coronavirus stuff. And the vaccines, which I honestly 5-10 years ago would not have imagined that they would be doing this with vaccines. But nevertheless, they are moving in the direction that you will not be able to buy or sell unless you're vaccinated. You won't be able to take part in society. They've come right out and said it over and over and over again. So they are moving in that direction. So I can totally understand and sympathize with anybody who thinks, especially when Bill Gates takes out a patent that is 060606, and they're putting ingredients in the vaccines, things like Luciferase, which is, yes, that is literally what they call it, some enzyme that has some glowing sort of effect to it. And when I first heard about it, I thought, well, somebody's making that up. You know, there's not something called Luciferase in there. That can't be right. I thought somebody was trying to, you know, jab the ribs of the Christian community or something, because it almost sounds ridiculous. And yet it's true. That's exactly what they put in these vaccines, or at least some of them. They've got a number of different vaccines now, so who knows what the ingredients are from one to the other. And even if they tell you that some of them do not have aborted fetal cells, quite frankly, I would not trust them, because the industry, the vaccine industry, is notoriously dishonest. They are notoriously dishonest. So I wouldn't trust them. But now that we've been talking about the influence of the tax-exempt foundations, is it not interesting that you have Rockefeller Foundation that foretold in their lockstep scenario this whole COVID-19 coronavirus situation? I mean, they're writing about it in detail back in 2010. And then we have another foundation, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, that has been very influential in the whole vaccine industry. In fact, if you go to the website path.org, it talks about the world's first malaria vaccine. And this is back in 2010. And it says, quote, PATH commends the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation for their outstanding new commitment to fund vaccine innovation and delivery. That's 2010. And of course, if you go to the website for the, if you go to gatesfoundation.org, their website is full of images. It's all about COVID-19, and they show people, you know, a woman being vaccinated, a medical worker in a lab handling what looks like a vaccine. And it's all about promoting the COVID vaccine and vaccines, it appears, in general. But they have gatesfoundation.org. They've got another page called Vaccine Development and Surveillance. Our goal, to advance public goods for global health through technological innovation by accelerating the development and commercialization of novel vaccines and the sustainable manufacture of existing vaccines. And then it goes on from there. But it's obvious they're pushing the whole COVID vaccine mandate, and I think vaccines in general, which Gates has been into for years. But it doesn't necessarily mean that he himself is qualified as some kind of an expert. And if we had real journalism going on in the country right now, in the mainstream, we have independent journalists. But in the mainstream, we simply do not have any kind of balanced investigation into the damaging impact of the vaccines and the people who are obviously being harmed by them, whether it's affecting their heart, as we see in some cases. Some people are suffering paralysis. You have people who are suffering blood clots. There's all sorts of harmful side effects that are being reported, but they're largely being ignored, or they're being mentioned, I think, somewhat covertly by the Centers for Disease Control. They mention them. We did a program talking about it. But it really should be, you know, a warning label right out front of anywhere that people go to get vaccinated. They should be warned. This could kill you. This could give you blood clots. This could cause heart palpitations or enlargement of the heart, etc. They should be warned about the potential harm, just like we have had with any other medication prior to COVID. Beforehand, where you'd see a commercial and somebody would advertise a drug and then they would say, you know, be aware, this could cause this side effect, et cetera, et cetera. People should be warned, but those warnings are being suppressed. They're being waved off by mainstream media, who's referring to people who make mention of them as conspiracy theorists, et cetera, or anti-vaxxers, this kind of thing, rather than having a sober-minded discussion about it, which is what I think as a country we need to have. All right, we are out of time. That is going to do it for us today. We've talked about these foundations and how from the 1920s all the way into our modern day, they continue to impact our reality, our education system, and now our health system dramatically is being impacted as we are seeing these great foundations with their massive amounts of money continue to influence the world we live in even today. So we need to be in prayer. We need to recognize what the Bible warns us about, that as time goes forward, evildoers and seducers would wax worse and worse, deceiving and being deceived. And yet we're told by the Lord, take heed that no man deceive you. We're not supposed to be ignorant of the wiles of the enemy, to be aware of them, to counter them as God gives us the ability to do, and throughout it all, to lift our eyes to heaven and put our faith and our trust in Him. All right, brethren, that is going to do it for us today. That's our show. We'll stop it there, but we will be back next time as the Lord leads us. Until then, God bless you guys. I'm Chris Pinto, and you've been listening to Noise of Thunder Radio.